now. Hey, see, I need to stop swearing now. Podcast time.
It's never stopped you before.
I think I've got a lot better recently. Don't you?
Yeah.
I have, Anna.
Yeah.
I have. Good morning, Sam. How are you?
Sam.
Yeah, I reckon I have got a lot better. I'm not as much of a potty mouth as I used to be. Maybe I'm growing up, Nick.
Maybe daft.
Right, let's crack on, eh? None of this small talk, like we care. First question, please, Nick. I will be looking into what I can do on Stridest, but in general, how can I offer more value and accountability when it comes to nutritional support for my one-to-one online clients? That's the first question. There is a second one. Cheeky bugger. But go on.
Excuse me.
Clear your throat for this one, son. Go on.
How can I offer more value and accountability when it comes to my one-to-one? Well, I don't listen. You know, 6 years, I don't listen to you anymore. Like, you know this. You know what? I think the first thing I would always go back to is taking all the agenda away and all the kind of processes away and all of the normal kind of, you know, I'd say normal kind of things, but the classical things that we would do with clients when it comes to nutrition, and just really, really seek to understand like your clients. I think, I know that sounds so obvious, but I do think we just have sometimes like a menu of services that we just pluck out and plug in because we know it works to a certain degree, but then it doesn't land with some people. So I think the first thing I would do is being really curious about where your clients are at with nutrition, what your clients, and included in that would be things like, you know, just as when they came in and they were deciding whether me investing my time and my finances in you, is it worth the return? It's the same thing with nutrition, isn't it? Because if I am got to change the way I eat, which involves time, which involves finance, which involves social environment, which involves going out, like I've got to understand the return on that. And I think understanding those things and where they're at with it will help you then plug in different elements of that service, which are going to really be beneficial for your clients. So I really, really think that before you kind of start to think about, oh, I could add reminders in my check-ins, or I could change the questions, or I could do whatever it is, I think strip away your assumptions and your biases and really, really dig into some detail with your clients, whether that is through surveys, conversations, through, you know, coaching calls, whether that's through polls on the Facebook group. Like, get a really good picture of your clients individually, understand their problems, understand what they're willing to invest, what they're not willing to invest. And I think that will help you plug in some really great additional value, which at the end of the day is going to help, and not just elements of the service. So that's what I would say. Second question, please, assistant.
Okay, now.
Come on.
Pushing it today. Second question. I am struggling to get progression photos and measurements off some clients. I add it to their weekly check-ins as a reminder and reiterate the reasons why we do it and how it benefits them, but I'm hitting my head against the wall. Any advice?
Same answer as I gave to the first one. Look, if people aren't providing some level of progression and success, largely it's because they feel like they haven't progressed in the right way enough. They've failed in some degree. So again, I would say seek to understand that. Seek to understand the importance of that for them. And then work backwards off it. That might mean taking the pressure away a little bit of photos and measurements for a certain period of time, seeking to understand how they're measuring their success, you know, seeking to understand why they haven't done it with, and I think that's a really important position to put yourself in, because if someone isn't sharing that, then that of that a lot of the time comes back to the relationship you have, that comes back to what they get from doing it, that comes back to psychological safety they have and they feel with you. So I think there's a lot of things that you can work on there. And it all comes back, which is why I said it similar to the first question, it will come back to conversations, understanding. Yeah, that's what I'd say. Any additional things on that, Anthony?
No, I think the biggest gap probably, or the biggest thing to look at to improve, is potentially how much you get to know them when you bring them in. Like, because that's, it's going to be an element of a trust thing, isn't it? And how they view and measure success and where their beliefs are and confidences. And for me, that has to be nipped in the bud at the start. And when I say nipped in the bud, it don't mean by you turning around and saying you must take progress photos or not come into the business, because again, it depends on your values, doesn't it? And the vision for your business. But essentially what I'm getting at is that if you really understand each client coming in, then you will know to what level of nutrition support that they need. I think always building out like nutrition support is in resources and videos and stuff like that to refer people to when a problem might come up. And your communication at point of sale and probably within the first week will determine whether someone's going to be compliant with progress photos or not. And I think making it as clear as possible as the benefits of them for that person is great, but also you have to understand how each one of them clients coming in wants to measure success. And I think you should meet them where they're at with that as well. So that would be my only bits of advice. Look at how you're bringing people in, because we can throw the kitchen sink at them from a nutrition perspective and they might never, ever value or access or value elements of that. It's like, let's look at how many of you, we've got a full marketing section, full client retention session on the platform. How many of you constantly go back to it before putting your marketing plans together? Probably minimal once you've sat through it once. So making sure that the specific information that an education and support you provide is completely tailored to the individual coming in. And then you won't have to feel like you have to throw more at them. That's it really, Nicholas. Next question, please.
How long do you think an effective consultation should last where we can get a sale, but not also use up loads of time?
I personally feel that you should block out at least around an hour for a consultation. Remember, the big thing here is I understand that you want to get the sale. I get it. That's the end goal for most of you. But it's not actually the end goal. The end goal is how much information can I gather? And it goes back to what I've just said in the previous question. How much information can I gather about a person to position the relevant service? Now, if I've rushed that and done it in 20, 30 minutes, and had they got any information, then the majority of the time you will then be fitting that your service, the client to the service instead of the other way around. And that's asking for a breakdown in accountability and adherence and therefore results further down the line. So I would block out an hour for a consultation. If you get the right amount of information and get the sale within that time, happy days. I don't think you'd need more than that. In some cases, you might have to split it over two. Like I've said this before, I said it on Instagram last week, that if they're a fairly cold lead, I believe that you can't just try and get the sale from one interaction, getting to know them once and be able to position the relevant service that is tailored and meets that person where they're at. I don't think that you can do that. From the thousands of consultations that I've done and probably done, a lot of them I've done wrong over the years as well in the early days. So block out an hour. Sometimes it can stretch over two, but the emphasis should be on how can I gather the right elements of information that then makes it easier to sell to the person, because you can match a service to meet the needs of that person. So that would be my advice. Any tips on chasing up inquiries? I had 10 inquiries last week, but as of yet, no consults booked in. Want to reach out again, but not sure how to go about it.
I mean, the simple answer is get hold of them. I mean, get hold of them, create some scarcity and urgency on booking in. The one thing when I just read through that question, just before I read it out, and I think you've also got to look back to, like, something's broken down somewhere, right? If someone's filled in the form and they're not taking the next step, go back to that and kind of go, right, what's the context behind that next step? Is there availability? Is there enough availability there for the people to book on? Is it clear enough what people are booking on to and what they're doing, what they're coming on the call for? So that's, first of all, I'd go back and double check that. So the first thing is look at the availability, position that, get hold of them all, whether that is an email, a DM, a call, and, you know, just be genuinely curious. I think when you're chasing, I think you got to chase it quick. I don't think you should leave it, because someone's taken action. If something's broken down, there's a little bit of potentially uncertainty, right? Whether that's what they're booking on for, what's going to happen. So I definitely think chasing up quicker rather than leaving it a certain amount, you know, a week or two, is going to be important to capitalize on it. But I think you got to bite the bullet and reach out and just be genuinely curious. I saw you filled out the form, haven't booked in yet. Are the times okay? Can we figure something out for you if the times don't work for you? Yeah, just get hold of them. That's what I'd say.
Next question, please, sir.
Oh, yeah. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I know my ideal client and have been making sure my message is to them. However, I have different skill set that could be for a different market. I work mostly with women, making sure they have the right mindset and approach to losing weight, but I'm also a lower back pain specialist and love the biomechanical side of things. Is there a way to use both skill sets and not confuse my audience? I was thinking of doing lower back pain assessments in the gym, but worried I would become the lower back pain guy. I also spoke to a sports therapist, and she may be keen to work, excuse me, on a referral program with me. Would love to know your thoughts on this.
Good question. I can relate, because I had a similar kind of thing, but it kind of gelled with the demographic, which yours kind of that specific skill set that you have, like, absolutely still lends it to the demographic that you've currently got. Like, 1,000,000% it does. So I don't think it dilutes your message too much in that sense. I think from a gym floor perspective, if you're going to do lower back pain assessments or so, like health MOTs or stuff like that, again, it's spreading awareness and stuff. And if you end up bringing a few guys into the business, or and you're treating them in and around them areas and stuff like that, like, do I think it's a problem? Absolutely not. I think it helps give you a lead magnet. It helps get people aware of what you're doing. It helps drive people into the business. And essentially, the message is in and around that specific problem. It's like when you're marketing to a female demographic about losing weight, the specific problems that they might have is their diet beliefs from previous diets, their confidence in themselves in the gym environment, their understanding and knowledge and structure and motivation, or where they are in the priority list because of work, family, kids, all of that type of stuff. So they're some of the issues. For this type of marketing campaign, you will be talking about this specific issues about around lower back pain, or people who've sat down for a hell of a lot of time over the past 2 or 3 years to a chair in a house and not moved a hell of a lot, or whatever, people who are fairly active but have it's becoming a problem from a restricting perspective on their movement and getting in the way of their movement. Like, it's still going to gel with some elements of your demographic. So all I would say is go ahead, like, but don't just dip your toes in it, go all in. And I would just add it to your message. I don't think it dilutes your message too much, because it can relate still to your demographic, in my opinion. What are your thoughts on that, Nicholas?
I think there's a massive piece in networking and local business marketing with this. I think Definitely getting, because there's a couple of different, like, there's it's a different trigger for people, isn't it, when they've got lower back pain. And usually it comes from chronic back pain and not acute. Do you know what I mean? When people have had a long time where they've had aches and niggles or impact injuries or whatnot. And so I think working with a therapist, an osteopath, a physio, creating a network of people around you would really help, because they deal a lot of the time with, you know, the acute stage rather than the chronic stage. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I would seek out local businesses where people are sitting down all day and, you know, they're office based and they're chair based and they're sedentary, maybe positioning some lower back clinics to go in and do bits and pieces and create awareness and whatnot within local businesses. I think that's a big one as well. So yeah, there's a few things there that I would suggest, but I definitely think networking and getting that kind of specialists around you to refer out to each other, I think is a great shout.
I think if you factor into your marketing campaign, like an additional stream, you going back on what I said before, off the back of what Nick just said, you actually wouldn't need to dilute your message too much. You could carry on, you could still implement little bits and pieces of this, but predominantly you are going off what Nick just said, going out there into local area and cross promoting and stuff like that, and building partnerships. And that would be, I suppose, a stream of your marketing that you'd be more proactive with, and it doesn't really get incorporated too much into your social media message that is to the specific demographic. So see how that goes, and then just report in on the calls, and then we can work through it with you. And that's all I would say off the back of that. Next question is, how would you price paired PT sessions compared to one-to-one?
In my opinion, as a rule of thumb, I would be going kind of two-thirds of the price of an app, like your hourly rate for your service, for pairs workouts, because for pair people working together, because yes, they're working, they're probably going to be similar things, etc., in the actual coaching session in the gym, but they're going to be very different in the way they approach potentially their nutrition. And even if you're working with couples, it's still going to be slightly different. I would go two-thirds of your average hourly rate for pairs versus one-to-one. What key things should be considered when looking to bring staff on and build a team?
I'm just going to list them. I think you have to do a lot of groundwork before really understanding and establishing the vision, the values, and the plan for the business. I think too many PTs get fucking a bit too far ahead of themselves with this, because it sounds great, it takes the pressure away and all of that, and then when they bring someone in within their kind of business, there is no roles and responsibilities, there's no values, there is no specific contract in place, there is no targets, there is nothing to work towards. It's just, can you come in and share this load from me that might be clients or check-ins and so on. So from top to bottom, from bottom to top, should I say, I would go vision, values, what you kind of want to stand for. Then off the back of it, I would get down what character traits, personality traits and stuff like that, and what you want this person to be, what you want them to have, the job description, I'd get that down, what you want their roles and responsibilities to be within the business, and therefore is there any targets that they need to meet, or is there any KPIs that you want them to kind of support you with meeting, all of that type of stuff. I would do all of that first. I would make sure that you're super clear, obviously, before this, on what it is that you want to kind of take away the pressure of. Is it the admin side? Is it the check-in side? Is it the volume of leads, so taking more clients? What's then going to be the split of ratio of payment and stuff like that? If it is personal training sessions, Are you going to pay them a basic salary? Is it going to be percentage? Like, all of that I would get down and be 100% clear on before you even think about putting it out to market. Most personal trainers do it the backwards way by going, right, okay, this sounds good. These are a couple of things that I want them to concentrate on. So I'm going to put it out there because it sounds great and it makes me look great. Park all of that, go through all of that, what I've just talked through first, and then you'll have tons more clarity on who it is that you want in and specifically what you want their roles and responsibilities to be. And then all I would say is just make sure that you've got measurable focuses in place where you touch base with them once a week, bi-weekly or monthly, to have a bit of a meeting, go over their inputs, go over their KPIs, and then support them. Because essentially, you, whoever it is coming into the business, you want to really develop them and improve them as a coach and as a business owner. And depending on where your business is then going to go off to grow, you want them to be part of it probably. So yeah, I would say all of them things that I've just said. Anything I've missed, Nick?
The only additional things I'd say is that if you can't literally hand over, whether it's a document or a PDF, on the way that you work, and like you said, the values you hold, and that to be crystal clear in a simple document to someone, then you shouldn't be taking anyone on, in my opinion. Mm. Like, it should be, if you don't know your opening closing hours, the price point, where you want your business to go next year, if you don't know what happens if someone goes on holiday, if you haven't got that nailed down, then in my opinion, we shouldn't be bringing someone on yet, right? And the second thing is kind of a bit of a mindset, I guess, is that when you work by yourself, and we're like this as well, when we work together, like, outsourcing stuff is really difficult. Like, relinquishing control over an element of your business a lot of the time is really, really hard. So I think there's got to be a level of acceptance that you either pay to outsource because you know that is a person who is a specialist in their area and they're going to do a way better job than you way quicker, or that someone isn't going to be doing it the same way you do it. And that might not be as good, you might deem, not the way that you want it. But that's why having that vision of your business is going to be so critical, because if it lends itself to that, then it's worth having. So yeah, the only additional thing I would say is that, I think you've already mentioned it, is there's taking someone on to take workload off and almost like contracting, let's say, another person into your business, or there's bringing someone into your business and creating a business then together to grow. And you're after two different people there, in my opinion.
That's a good shout. That's a good shout. Last question, is it? Yeah, last question. Looking to go with Stridest, your honest take on how it seems to be working since its launch, or at least the feedback you've heard?
I think I'm only going to go on what I know, and also what I know of when new software, new apps come out, is that the beginning phase of that development and that first kind of version, let's say, is never going to be the last thing. And I think there's, what I know of Stridest, there's a big, huge vision of it. And I think I've got all confidence in Suk that he'll deliver that as well. So I do think that there's a lot of advantages of going into it now, because the founding members, so to speak, you know, whenever you use software, you're always going to be able to give feedback. And I know Suk's like, I mean, God, I don't know, he had us on, he had loads of people. I think you've got an opportunity to grow and give feedback and have an implement and affect change and development in it. So I personally think the pros of getting in it early and growing with it far outweigh maybe some of the things that aren't yet in place, so to speak. But I think it's, I personally think it's going to be, I think it's going to probably be the app, in my opinion, because the plans are just unreal for it.
Yeah. I've heard nothing but good things at the minute. And there's a couple of guys. And in fact, whoever's just asked this question, put a post into the group to see what guys are using it. There's about three or four that I know of. So just get some honest feedback from them as a PT. But I've heard nothing but good things and seen nothing but good things. So, yeah. That's that. Any questions? Anyone want us in the live, Nick? Nobody wants us, do they? Oh, there we go. Nicole's using Stridist at the minute. She really likes it, which is great. I know Charlotte is as well, and she likes it, which is good. Yeah, so ask in the group, whoever asks a question. I don't think there's any more questions. Right, Nick.
Ryan.
Final thoughts.
Breakfast, because I haven't had breakfast yet.
What the hell have you been doing this morning?
Training.
Have you? Talk us through your training session to end us and end the session. Yeah,
it was one snatch every minute for 10 minutes, which felt terrible. And then it was 21:15:9 of 125 deadlifts and 30-inch box jumps, which felt worse.
Oh.
Because I did Murph last night with the best.
And the fact that you're only 30 inches tall, so it's a big jump for you, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, it's a climb, isn't it?
Right, on that note, I'm going.
Rick.
See you in a bit.
In a bit.